We move on to page 280, Clarnham Road Reserve. Councillor Telfer, do you have a?
Yes, I'd like to move first of all the first section on that is the noting the consultation and proceeding with the design and notes that the application's been submitted. And then the number five, which ties that up. And then I would foreshadow discussion or a motion on the variations on number four about holding or retaining.
We might suspend standing orders on that because there are a few permutations. I understand that. So you may speak to the motion. Paragraphs 1, 2, 3 and 5.
Yes. We've been through a process of starting there, going to the school, coming back. We have worked hard as a group, a community, and got reflections from the community on this. It was very popular, and obviously it can work. We come and we put this application in. There are some minor things like the man across the road that doesn't like the toilet that I'm assured we can change that half a block to satisfy that particular person. But we have plans that work and are in hand that are supported by the Dover Tennis Club and the school and the community at large. So I will move that we support the eastern side of Clarnham Road Reserve.
Thank you. Seconded, Councillor Hutchinson, anything to add? Anyone against?
I've just got a question.
Question, yes, I have.
So there's no more detail with point four?
Like, we're going to deal with that in a moment. So okay. At the moment, we're just, in a sense, slicing it down the boundary there and talking about the new recreational area side.
So everything I can see on the screen is what we're doing.
Yes.
A lot of detail in this motion on the material, but just clarify.
Yes. If there are no other speakers, we put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Now, Clarnham Road Reserve western portion. So, I do want to move suspension of standing orders, Councillor Telfer, or just deal with it separately.
We can suspend standing orders and get some feeling from the group.
Are you moving that way? Seconded, Councillor Crossland. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Councillor Clancy, did you want to speak to that?
Yeah, did we? I'm sorry, no speakers have proceeded more to this.
No, we're now speaking informally. Standing orders are suspended. But just to clear what we want to know, we've got three options, and people might have questions or they might have opinions about retaining that western brewery. What if we had a map up on the screen? I don't know. Can we do that? Or give me the dangerous
So my question was, do we resolve that we would redevelop Arden Reserve on the basis that we would be selling that other portion?
Our initial discussion involved selling off the unimproved bit, which is the western side. But it wasn't set in process of motion. It was, I think it was part of the discussion. It might have been an understanding of somebody, but it wasn't fixed as a motion. Is there no map? Oh my goodness. But if that's not a map of the whole reserve. So anyway, the options that are suggested there, keep it. I'm probably going to start on bias on the difference between the first, there are three options, right? The first two, retaining and keeping the existing infrastructure, or retaining and developing open space. I guess that is a difference. Or otherwise, beginning a potential disposal process. When we talk about the existing infrastructure, what on earth was staff suggesting be retained? Is it an old tennis court that can't be used?
Yes. Or can I?
Councillor Telfer?
The community, in their returns, some of them said that they would like that asphalt, which is the better part, those first 2.5 courts, they didn't have the dip in them, retained for scootering, walking your dog around the edge, learning to ride the trike. It was a bit of flat land where people actually used that area. And others said, while the play netball next door, their child would be kicking a ball. So the idea was that that asphalt essentially stayed. And that's a different thing from, I'm really scared now, a bit about landscaping, because that would be pulling it all up, doing the lawns and all the rest of it. So that's a different...
All right, well, that does help explain the three different options. Thank you. Councillor Costum?
Okay. Just to help me with that, which exactly are we talking about? Those three courts in
Brighton? Snowden, that's the west.
Okay, so it's just the two courts on the left-hand side that would be left out of the development?
There's 2.5 left, because by the time you got spectators for the netball court, we'd actually moved it over a bit more than we ever envisioned.
Correct me if I'm wrong, so one of the options would just to basically fence off the 2.5 courts and just leave it as it is.
I believe you need the waist height fence around to stop the balls and the children ending up on the road.
Order, I'll ask Mr. O'Brien to come forward and...
Through the chair, yeah. So basically, the western end is about 2.5 courts worth at that end, and there's some different options there. If we retain the court surface there, we'd still pull down the perimeter fence and the lights, and then we'd need to integrate there's different levels there, so we'd need to integrate the retaining walls somehow across the two areas. So there'd be a bit of level work that we'd need to address. And then we probably need to look at how we might dress up that court surface anyway, because it's looking pretty rough, and you know, we'd obviously have a brand new complex next to something looking pretty rough, so we'd need to go through how we work that out. Otherwise, there's the option of landscaping, and so we can pull it up and just integrate a landscape design into that end. And then the last option is, of course, that we can fence it off. We'd need a 3.6 high metre fence there on the edge of the courts to fence it off, so it's right for tennis, and then clear the site.
Just one question on that.
Yep.
If you're removing the fence on the western side, it's not going to be much of a kickabout area, is it?
No, well, then if we were going to have another fence or something, we'd have to look at that. There's all associated costs if you want to put another fence back there.
But, I mean, it talks about existing infrastructure, and admittedly I didn't know what that meant, but if we're keeping an existing flat sealed surface as a recreation area,
yeah,
then why not keep the existing fence?
Well, the fence is in pretty poor condition and getting pretty old, so and plus it's going to be linked into the other parts of the fence. So we thought we'd pull it down because the feedback we're getting from the community was more about having a space for skating and scooters and those sorts of things.
All right, thank you. Are there questions from members? Councillor Hull?
In terms of the community consultation, how clear was it made to the community that there was, you know, and this is in possibly in the motion tonight, I'm assuming that that's what's coming, that there's going to be a portion of this main site?
Well, first of all, That's not true, so let's be careful with our language. It's not true that there's a portion that's going to be sold. The consultation, to answer your question though, it's not a statement, it's misinformation. So let's all be careful about not doing that. It can be, because you talked about an option of, not an option, you asked whether the community was going to be, was consulted on land being sold off. Now, there is no proposal on foot at the moment for the land to be sold off. Let's be clear. The option is before us tonight. Keep it with, as a civil service for recreation, keep it as a green space for recreation, or begin the disposal process, which of course entails its own consultation. So
page 281.
Yeah, that's what I'm on.
Talks about the possibility of sale of land.
That's right. It hasn't taken place. Well, sorry, Councillor Hull, you asked if the consultation process talked about the land being sold off.
Did we just get out of time to communicate?
No.
Or it's all ours.
Okay, you're starting to get out of order, so let's not go there. I've tried to explain it as best I can. There's been no consultation on selling off because that hasn't formally arisen. That is an option before us tonight. That's what we're discussing. Others? Any other elected members? Can I just have a I want to know which motion to proceed with. So out of a sealed surface for recreation, a green space for recreation, or commencing disposal consultation, can I just have a show of hands out of those three? Who's for the sealed surface? Who's for the green space? Councillor Mason, did you vote twice? Possible. She's possible. For green space.
Look, I'm happy with either, as long as you can use it, really.
Another point for that. Who's for the commencing a disposal inquiry? Right, so that seems to be the one to test. I'm getting a couple more for that. So I'll resume standing orders, and let's test that motion. Would someone like to move what appears on page 281 as 4A to 4D, and we'll just see where we go. If it passes, fine. If it doesn't, then we look at those recreational options.
Can I move 4C?
Well, it's a package for rain to 4, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's A to C.
Yeah, 4A to D
is
a package. Can, management, tell me if I'm wrong. Mr. Marita says I'm wrong.
Yep.
So, Councillor Hutchinson is testing that. Is it seconded? Councillor Duncan, did you wish to speak, Councillor?
No.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Hull?
I'm speaking against because the question I asked before, quite a valid question, as to whether we tested the appetite in our consultation for this manoeuvre that we're taking here now. And once we tested the appetite of our skateboards and, hit a tennis, whatever else, we didn't test the appetite for this. So it's quite, the consultation's got shortcomings. We're making a decision tonight about whether it's green or sealed tarmac. And sure, we've got some data on that, okay? But we've got no data at all about whether there's an appetite for sale. And as council problem, though, we would give up food for a few days to actually allow this sort of open space to happen in our world, particularly in Warrida. It's the current motion on the books, actually. And knowing that area up there, and I'm glad that it has no connection now with the high school because I have a conflict of interest, but knowing that area up there, it's fairly well populated. It's not a budding open space or a bush native. Open space would be valuable. I'd like to know from the council staff what is the ratio of open space to community need up there.
got someone to comment on whether it's Seagate Heights or do you mean the ward?
No, just in that
area,
that suburb.
The 500 metres or so, or whatever. I know we've got Crystal Street, which is a local reserve with nothing in it. Alpine Road Reserve is not far away, very recently upgraded. Amongst our who can answer, Mr. O'Brien.
Yeah, through the chair, there is a low provision of open space in that area. I've done some consultation with the open space planning team on that. We didn't include the mapped areas in this report, but we can provide those to council to show that there's a shortage in the area.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, on that basis, validates my concerns. We've got the data. I went to the people last election indicating that I would support retention of open space and try and attract even more. We're trying to do that in Warrigal. I'm going to apply the same standard to that part of the world as well. I think we should keep it all, and it's a wonderful opportunity for a fairly big area to do something quite good in that area. And even though that the tennis club has, the demise of the tennis club has led to its current state, it doesn't mean that we should just sell it on.
A question for Councillor Schilling.
Just a couple of questions to clarify for A, B, C and D. This does not commit us to selling the land, correct?
Correct.
And this will start the consultation process on the community revocation?
Correct.
And if the... say we decided to revocate the community land title, but we decided not to sell it, it would just sit on the books as a piece of land that we own, we don't get rates for it, and we could do something to it, correct?
That's potential, although you wouldn't normally revoke unless you had an intention. Bear in mind, it has to be signed up by the minister as well.
But that could occur if we decided it was revoked, and then we went, hold on a minute, we've made a mistake here.
Any manager want one comment? Ms. Rios Mehdi?
Thank you for the question. So essentially the next stage is actually to go to public consultation, which is correct as outlined. Part of that intent, which is what the mayor mentioned, is that when you do proceed this, there is an intent to potentially sell it. However, if you go through the stages of revoking or going to consultation, coming back to council endorsing and want to continue, get the minister's approval, council at that point in time has the opportunity to dispose of it.
Have
a bit in that case, we might not act on it immediately.
I'm sure we won't act on it immediately. It's never happened before. Coming back to the circle, we've had Nova Seconder speaking against. Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Telfer?
I'm not in favour of that motion. I have a question. My question.
It's a question.
My question was, what regard do we have to page 297? Do you consider the western portion of Tarnham Road Reserve to be surplus land? 17 people said that they said no, we don't want it to be surplus, and we had 3 said yes. The others were unsure.
Councillor Bliss, we've had movement and seconder, we've had a speaker against, so the next speaker is to be in favour. You've got a question.
Yeah, 2 questions. First of all, if this was to be disposed of, what would be the likely use that would happen? What would be the use for if we sold it?
In the debate that occurred when the whole matter came up initially, this wasn't formalised, but it was mentioned that it would be housed.
So my question is that if I can just preface it, if the outcome would be housing, whether we should move forward with that, is if it were, would there be any restrictions on the activity on the other side, on the eastern side, because of the impact on the housing? Would that, would there be introduction of curfews? Would there be other issues that we would face and restricted usage because we would allow housing abutting the recreation facility?
I think I'll take you as also speaking against the motion.
But that's my question.
Yeah, well, I'll take this rhetorically. But sorry, it is more than that. I mean, we're talking about the, with the length of time it takes for disposal of surplus property, it would be likely that the recreational area would be developed first. So just to clarify, we're not talking about a motion that says there should be housing. The question is it surplus, assuming that the recreational improvement happens on the eastern side? If it is surplus, then the question is what's the best value for council? So housing actually comes up in that discussion, but it's not a foregone conclusion. Does that help you?
No, no, because I guess if we are, that is ultimately going to be, if we pursue to get rid of the land, it's going to be turning into housing. And we need to know, we're going to invest all this money on the recreational activity, whether we need to reduce or change the recreation activity because of the fact we're going to have housing later on. So actually, it's going to impact how we make that initial investment. That's
Well, we're not deciding housing tonight, that's for sure. We're deciding whether to consult on the surplus or otherwise nature of the land. Councillor Cryer?
Yeah, question. Does the FRA really need to resolve what we're going to do with the western portion impact for detailed design for the eastern side?
No, it was a pretty good endorsement from the community from what happens on the eastern side.
That's my question.
Councillor Telfer?
Have I the right to speak against?
Well, really, the last speaker was against. So if there's no one else in favour of the motion, we should.
That's the question. If this fails, what's going to happen? Because we really need to make a decision.
If this fails, then we will look at the first two options as to. That's what happens when there are basically three options. It is difficult in a binary debating environment, but that's what we would do. I'll go back to Mover then. Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, the intention is to explore it with the community. Let's have the conversation. We went through this, I remember, 18 months back, when we looked at the map and we said, okay, there is actually Grace, Cadell and Alpine within 500 metres. Sure, it's not the 400, but 500. So I figured that we had covered some ground, but let's revisit to make sure everyone's on the same page. And let's ask the community what they want.
Put the motion, all those in favour. All those against. Motion's lost. So I would entertain a motion to either retain, and we might look at, I'll look at someone to either retain the western portion. Existing infrastructure is such an unfortunate wording. I suspect that a sealed recreational space might be better, or as green open space. I mean, I think they are the two different options. Mr. O'Brien, is that really what we're talking about with it?
Yeah,
fair summary. Councillor Crossman.
So it's a question for staff because it's difficult to know what the community want, whether because they've not really been given this option. So what I'm trying to look for is just something to maintain that for the time being in its current format so we can actually make a proper decision. So I don't want to reseal it all and then the community go, you know what, I'd rather just have some biodiversity there and we really don't put plants and some seeding in and somewhere to put dogs. But I don't want to do the reverse and put biodiversity in and they go, we should have kept that call, it was brilliant. So this is the dilemma we've got, because we really make the decision without that
consultation as well. Another option is a motion that the community be further consulted on potential recreational uses for the western portion. Getting a few nods. Councillor Telfer, what do you think?
I'd like to move that we retain the western portion of Tarnant Road Reserve and that the community be further consulted and that this be brought to an elected member forum for discussion.
Yes. So can that be written up, please? Desired use is what desired on the desired improvements to the western portion of Tarn Road Reserve. Thank you. And maybe after Tarn Road, the first line in the middle, Tarn Road Reserve and requests that. Or it's kind of requesting administration. Have that council tell
you? We need to say that it's going to come to elected member forum because it will echo a report be brought back to an elected member forum for further discussion.
Sure. Really, the report should come back to council, I suspect, and administratively that the mayor and staff will work out an elected member forum time. So that could be noted by governance that should occur. But a report being presented to the April or May. So the general council meeting in May. It just needs to be the council receive the report. Or the council receive the community consultation results. All right. Councillor Telfer, happy with that?
Thank you.
Thank you for your space.
In the beginning of that, I believe that we have a variety of indications of how the area could be used in the survey. There's a great long list and many ideas, but there's no strong, one definite idea that comes forward. So both going back again and then people have another thought about how they want to use that, maybe we can come up with something that strikes a balance in our community. But it was always my intention that given that we have invested heavily in the eastern portion, that we don't turn around and do another very large investment in the western portion, that we do keep to some simple plan that allows us to use that area effectively as open space.
Thank you. Hopefully the staff will take that on board with a further consultation. Seconded, Councillor Hutchinson. Any further comments? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. I just want to add one point for staff that did occur to me. I haven't passed it on yet. But in community engagement, I have had discussions with staff about asking age demographics. But normally that is done in, are you in the age group 10 to 20, 20 to 30, etc. Not asking people's birth year. I find that Well, I'm very uncomfortable with that approach, and I'm astonished that it was taken, to be honest. I think it discourages people from answering surveys. So perhaps an appropriate grouping could be done next time we're asking. It's a good idea to know people's ages, but I didn't mean exactly. Anyway.
Could just do a bracket, could be like 25.
That's what's normally done, sure. But leave it to the experts. Page 306, sports lighting projects. Councillor Clancy.
What should move as written?
Thank you. Anything further? Councillor Pryde, seconded. So I can go through it easy with that. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Prioritisation of projects, which now includes the museum on page 312. Councillor Shilling seconded. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. I'm just checking, I can't see Councillor Mason online at the moment. She's also. Right. Page 316, Cove Sports and Community Club. This might be one where we have to start with some questions, I think. But
or we could suspend standing orders.
Well, thank you, Councillor Shilling. Moved, seconded, Councillor Pryde. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. So who are the appropriate staff that can answer questions for us about the design, etc.? Thank you, Ms. Dove. Can you come forward a bit? I don't know, maybe that chair on the side, or chair in this corner. It's probably better, but we can all see you then. If I would start with a question. It's true that in two ovals or one oval, I did ask a question along the way, surely we don't want less car parking. And I was told there's more car parking, which sort of surprised me. But then when I looked at it again, the more car parking arises because if you have two ovals, you put more parking next to a potential bowls and net ball, that's fine, but it means you've now got two ovals, not one, and less car parking on the Lonsdale Road side. So given the already pressured parking demands, how does that work, Lisa?
Well, essentially, I guess we're looking at BMX and stuff relating. So when you have a second night with there, some of the car parking would then be allocated from previous people that would have come for BMX and soccer. Also, as part of the feasibility study, we have to do our due diligence when we look at car parking numbers, and that's something that we take into consideration. When we came back to council, we could actually give you a detailed explanation of two ovals and these kind of amenities facilities. This is the number of car parks we need, and this is how we lay out the site. So that's really what we'd like to undertake as part of this feasibility study, is that kind of research and analysis, so we can come back and show you exactly the car parking numbers and what we can get back.
Thank you. Well, let's start off with some factual questions rather than opinions. Councillor Crossan?
How many car parks do we have at the moment, and what is the maximum that we have with any of these designs? Because for 6 years, I've had do not let two people use that facility at the same time. There's no car parking. But no one's ever come to me and say, oh, that's all right, but if we can build car parks, there's no issue. There is no left for car parks.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can't give you that answer at the moment exactly the exact number of car parks and what we will need to implement this kind of project, but that's something that we'll check on once we have that feasibility study. So what we need to do is consider who the exact users will be, what the demands are, what peak numbers are, and actually factor in the car parking inflation with that.
So my second question is, if we can't have the same music group playing the sport at the same time, how does two owners work?
So essentially what you potentially do is you could have one overall in, essentially that would be different size overall. So one would be we would try and push to peak AFL sizing, which is what we're looking at the lower size overall, and the upper size overall could be a smaller overall. So what potentially could do is have, say, juniors in the upper overall in the morning, and then seniors in the overall down the bottom. You probably look at staging at a time, so that's why you have a complex design, so you can have change rooms where they can run out, but then have one section played, and then the overall at the other time, but then the companies will need to explore.
Okay.
But if we do have the additional car park around the back, that might help alleviate some of that pressure. Keep in mind it's bowls. Bowls generally are all don't play in winter as well, so that would take that pressure up, and then you've got some of the offset, of course.
Yes, I just wanted to ask staff about the way that football, Aussie rules football, for example, might be programmed. And is there a fair likelihood we would get away with one full size oval and not need two? I mean, on the other side of the court, I can see a real case for other sports. But then when you look at the data, participation rate data, in this report, it's heavily weighted towards Aussie rules and cricket. So immediately my alarm bells go off, and I think, well, are they in a position? I mean, the two sports are different seasons, but in terms of each of the two sports, are they in a position to program in the morning and afternoon, for example, which means the one over may be adequate, or would we run into trouble?
You could potentially have one aggregator, for example, other communities that have got, they have it where, say, the juniors have played at one evening, the women have played at another evening, and then the men have played on a particular day. So they can schedule that. A lot of that's dictated by the SNFL, and the SNFL and the Football Association will dictate the time of when games and what leagues can be played at what times.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's something that we can work through with the associations as to what could potentially be hosted at that site.
So there's not pressure on us to make that full overs.
Well, if you're talking to the SNFL and to cricket, they have advised that there is the pressure for two overs, and that they do have the demand. One thing that they're very keen to see to build cricket is the opportunity for non-cricket emotional things. They're getting a lot of demand for that. But if you talk to the actual leagues, they say that there is that demand there for sports.
So just on the question of night cricket, isn't that a matter of appropriate lighting?
Correct. You know, you are right. But
I do understand. But I do. I mean, I do pick up from the point. Yes, cricket and football peak bodies say yes, we need more ovals.
Yeah,
do understand that. But having said that, not many suburban football clubs of their own right would have more than one oval. Other questions, Councillor Hull.
What's the staff's preferred action? The professionals. I'd like to know what the professionals that we pay money for. What do they think? What's their advice to us?
In my honest opinion, my preference has been to do the feasibility study first off and actually explore what we can achieve at that site. That would be my honest preference for what we do. I think probably the demand at that site, probably one oval with a half reserve would meet the demand with the lawn bowls and netball. But in saying that, I think we actually need to do a proper feasibility analysis so we can come back and give council a correct answer.
So, sorry, Councillor Hull, picking this theme up, but is this being presented to us tonight in a sense knowing that there's not enough evidence to make a decision?
No, I'm not saying that at all. Oh. I'm not saying that there's not enough evidence.
Yeah.
I was asked what my preference is.
Yes.
I
do appreciate that.
But it's like any project, what we need to do, and this is how we get our projects right, is we need to come up with the options and then take them away and actually do the feasibilities to be able to come back to give an explanation of what we can achieve at the sites, what the actual costs will be associated with the sites. So that's
sure.
What we're seeking for.
Now, my understanding was, and maybe it was only an implication, was that we needed to give some guidance to staff so that the feasibility was not looking at one or two ovals, but looking at one of those options so that, you know, it's more focused.
Correct.
Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. So it, Councillor Hull, do you want to pick it up from there?
Well, it's a chicken and the egg. Maybe we do need to do, because there's two options here, maybe we do need to do two feasibility studies to advise us as to what might work on the site. I'm just wondering also with the two multi-purpose ovals, given its proximity on the southern side to residents, and there's already been rock throwing and the like happening in years past, and it wasn't me, I would like to know whether the fencing has been considered, just like council did with Plimpton Oval at Plimpton Park.
What's the latest with the fencing solutions if we had football there?
If you had football there, you'd have to run a high perimeter fence along that distance to prevent balls from going into people's areas.
And you've now got, I mean, I understand that net fences.
Yeah, we've got the net fences. No, it's similar.
Court fence.
Similar to what we put at Mitchell Park and back of goals in front of the clubhouse there, it would be a high net fence to protect residents.
Thank you.
Well, seriously, this is an important decision. Can we actually work up two feasibility studies to look at both of them and have a thorough assessment of both options?
Yeah, tell us about that. So,
it's not uncommon for a feasibility study to consider various options, so that can be undertaken.
Okay. Well, why wouldn't we ask for more evidence? Presumably, it won't maybe double the cost, maybe increase the cost.
It wouldn't double the cost, no, but it's something that we can explore.
We're going to pay for the information we're providing.
Yeah, well, it's a decision for the next generation, so it's worth getting right. Mr. Harris.
Just, I take the points made by Councillor Harlan, certainly isn't this we'll be doing the one feasibility study addressing multiple issues as opposed to multiple feasibility studies. Yeah. It's a subject that has to make a
point. Thank you. I think that's what Councillor Holland meant. Councillor Austin.
Thank you. One of the things that I noticed is missing on all the reports and sort of raised again just before Christmas is indoor courts. Members will be aware there are no indoor courts in the whole of the southern suburbs in Manning Council. In fact, the nearest ones would be in Morphett Vale. The schools are always
at Chapel Park.
Aberfoyle Park isn't in the city of Merrin either. It's not that close.
Merrin's vision fitness.
But we heard we're still short of indoor courts, so I'm just wondering why this site is not considered to as potentially two more indoor courts at that location. Well raised by members of the community in the feedback. Basketball and soccer could be used by the netball. I don't know if Mitchell Park netball is going to use the indoor courts. People playing sports in that area as well.
I guess from the basic, from the committee consultation we got back, the strongest sports identified, I guess, was SNFL, cricket, netball, and national balls. I considered that. It doesn't mean that in the future it could be something we could consider, but I guess we took it from community feedback. We're also aware, I think the report talks about that, that, you know, it's been all proven, even it's not married. They are looking at, you know, constructing a regional facility there, and I guess we're just looking at competing demands like they. So that's why we didn't give consideration to the regional facility.
Councillor Duncan.
I've just got a question about the lawn mobs. There doesn't seem to be that much. The association would like to have lawn mobs, but it doesn't seem to be any particular club or anybody that's going to identify with that particular site. So I wondered if we could have more information, or are we going to just take from all the other clubs and deplete their memberships?
I think lawn mobs could have a workplace with lawn mobs, but it won't exactly be a club that will relocate there. I think it would be more a brand new club that would look to establish itself at the site, rather than being an actual club that would say Marion will move up here or something like that.
To me, the obvious thing to do, now that we've seen the initial numbers, and that's an absolute starting point, if there are over 150 people in the local catchment area, the two southern wards and over the other side of the hill, over 150 people, even if half of those people wanted to move a local club, that would be enough for a bolster. But it seems to me the obvious thing to do next, and with great respect to the three surrounding clubs, would be for Bowls SA, if they've got these addresses, to write to those people confidentially and say, there is a concept at the moment, may not go ahead, but for a clubhouse, a new clubhouse, if there's a new club to be formed in Hallett Cove or Heights or whatever it is,
if it was formed, would you be interested in being a member? It's non-binding, but just a bit of an idea. Or are you, or would you definitely not change from where you are? Because I mean, it might be 90% one way or the other. That I'd really like to know that.
Yeah, and that's the information that really I was trying to get at is, are we going to be able to, we can build it and do it, but is it going to be there and not be, nobody will work, use it? So if we have that information, then I would be happy.
So I'm not sure who's been in touch from staff with Lawn and Bowls SA, but is that what they are planning to do, Mr. Hubbard? Might not.
Yeah, through the chair, I've been in contact with the CEO of Bowls SA, and he's well aware that there may be some encroachment or impact on the surrounding club if a new club was formed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually doing a piece of work at the moment, largely based on our conversations around developing the sustainability model that they're expecting to complete in the next 2 months on what makes a sustainable Bowls club, how many members do you need, how many members do you need, and potentially found the code site as a test case for that model.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, I mean, since we're still talking informally, I like the idea of a bowls club. I really think it could work there, but I would really want to know the results of such a survey. And if Bowls SA aren't willing to do that, then I'd say forget it. You know, I mean, it's that critical. It's a really important bit of evidence.
Just a couple of things on that very point. When we're talking about Bowls SA, I'm aware that there are certain sites in the bowling world where wind is a pretty deplorable factor. Wind is a real menace to bowls for obvious reasons. It can be mitigated against, obviously, with design. But I would certainly want to ask the question whether that general area would be a prospective club site. And the other thing was to find out what the general trends are in Lawn Bowls. There was a time when there were a lot more people of a lower age group starting to come in, but I don't think we're in touch at this stage with the general trends of where the sport is going. Because what I see happening is, yes, I think a lot of people, for example, in Haddock Cove, Drop Park, Shadow Park, would rather play more locally than have to go down the hill or Bonker Bring or whatever. But by the same token, with a general rise in population of bowlers, that wouldn't matter because the clubs would all adjust accordingly as demand follows through.
Sure. We better get back into a formal debate. So one thing I'll just say before we formulate a motion is that, I'll come back to Councillor Schilling in just a sec, is that one of the things that makes me irate around this place is the notion of just kicking things down the road. Rather than make a decision, kick it down the road. And so there's no time frame for the feasibility analysis. So is it possible, so assuming that we're going to do a one and two overall options within the report and spend a small fortune together, what would be the expected time frame?
Within the report, we've got our expected time frame being that September that we can essentially get our report back and yet present to council.
The motion says in 2021.
Yeah, apologies. In the actual report, we need to break down the timeline. And then, apologies, that's on page 321. So what we'd like to know is that the decision for council tonight undertake the feasibility business case and have that completed in August, and then actually bring it back to council for a decision direction in September 2021.
Okay, but soccer and BMX move out at the end of this year?
Correct.
So potentially we could be deciding on what we're going to do in September this year. That would presumably give us a little chance of building it the following year.
You'd have to spend probably, if we can't make the decision in September to actually proceed with the project and we had the funding, you would then need to take another 12 months of detailed design documentation as you start construction in 2023.
Okay, thank you for that. Councillor Schilling.
I'd like to move something if we're up to that point.
Yes, go ahead.
I'd like to move basically as written, and I'd like to make some changes to option one. That would be one multi-purpose oval, half oval for flexible use, so removing potential. That we only consider separate clubhouse facilities, so take out a single integrated clubhouse. That we consider a district level lawn bowls greens with further consultation with Lawn Bowls SA. Improve netball facilities, playground, suitable car parking and landscaping amenities.
All right, so, and then part three is actually, if you look over the page, do you want to specify September 2021?
The second general council meeting in September.
Is that what you were saying, Ms. Zab, or August or September?
There will probably be completed in August, which will give staff the opportunity to write to the council.
All right, I was just trying to. So September 2020, that's good.
And where possible, if the four southern councils and the mayor could have a briefing before it comes to council, so we know what we're
in. I think we can just take that for granted. So let's test that. Would you like to speak to that?
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Members, this has come from a lot of torturous times with this site. Councillor Crossland, Councillor Duncan, Councillor Garda, myself and the mayor met with Ms. Zub and several other staff members just before Christmas to discuss this. And option one, which I'm proposing this evening, was the more populous option between all of us. It would benefit the site, it would allow the clubs to grow, it will introduce a new sport to the site, but it will also move us away from the integrated model to separate clubhouses, which we believe is needed and where possible should be done at future sites. We think this is a great opportunity for Cove, and I think it's fairly self-explanatory and it's time to do it.
Second, Councillor Duncan.
I don't need to talk to
you. Anyone speaking against? Councillor Hull.
Yeah, I'm speaking against because the feasibility study that we seem to agree is needed is not happening now for all the options. And I'm concerned that the separate clubhouses, like, is this Brighton Oval? Is that what it is? Brighton Oval all over again. Like, you know, the bizarre situation down there where I think there's three different club rooms. You know, and all looking at each other. We didn't do that at Edwardstown. That's integrated. That's working in terms of at least the building and housing those people, and they haven't been brawling amongst themselves. Like, obviously there's other issues there, as you know. Why would we do the Brighton Football Club option? Football Oval option. I don't get it. And in the northern part of the city, you know, we're quick to point out in the north, you know, the stands in the north. Well, the stands in the north with ovals is because we damn well had to, because there was no room to consider having two ovals. You know, you're lucky to get one oval on there, and then you've got the problem of urban development in close proximity around it. You've got the luxury down there with the open space. And because we're actually creating more energy down there for soccer and BMX, you actually can have the option of optimising the site. I think it's a missed opportunity to actually explore the two oval options. Car parking, we don't have a detailed report on the possibility of extracting more car parks down there. If worst comes to worst, there is a tunnel underneath the Lonsdale Highway where people could walk through. And I just think that this is, it's just too convenient, really. And I whilst I haven't had the same degree of interface with the community down there, I have had some, and I know that there is sections down there that would value the two oval option. Obviously, to have the fencing up to protect the residents.
Yeah, let's keep going. Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Jessica.
Just a question.
Yes.
Is there anything that can specify that the separate clubhouses are not all of the same character like they are at the Brighton Oval?
To answer the question, I don't think there's a need to specify.
Okay.
I think you wait till the report, and then that's something that we could take action on if we wanted to, depending on what the recommendations are.
And I guess also my other question was, if there wasn't appropriate interest in lawn bowls, could we actually revisit two ovals?
Well, that would certainly happen, because if the feasibility study comes back, including the bowls SA consultation, they're not interested in actually writing the people to form up to make sure there's a nucleus of people for a club. Well, it's up to council, but I doubt that we'll be building a building and for 3 million and hoping that people come and live there.
You know. So would we need to specify that the feasibility study looks at that option?
Well, I think Councillor Schlemmer's intent is in there. In talking about consultation with Bowls SA. And staff have taken that on board in light of our discussion. So, you know, at this stage, feasibility study, you take it broadly, and then we can get right into the detail once that comes back. Being my recommendation. Is there anything to add?
No, that's correct.
Yep. But then, any other speakers in favour? Then I'll put the motion. Councillor Schilling, anything to close the debate?
No, I think I've said everything.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by a majority. Provisions called. Those who are in favour, please raise your hand until I've called your name. Councillors Clancy, Hutchinson, Telfer, Schilling, Duncan, Gard, and Crossland. Those against, please raise your hand. Councillors Masika, Valescu, Fryer, and Hull. The motion is carried on the division. So we move on. Shopping trolley bylaw. Councillor Valescu.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'd like to recommend the motion printed towards the more extensive community education campaign, and also as well as tightening up the provisions after the lawyer's recommendations. And I'd like us to keep in mind that if there are, if this move is stopped by the state government, that we articulate that to the community, because this is something that does frustrate the community, and I can understand the objection by the retailers, because obviously the easier it is for us to spend more money, the better it is for them. And I understand they provide a service and provide employment. I think the community needs to know that we're fighting on their behalf, and it is quite important. It is really the industry that provides trolleys taking care of the pollution problem that their trolleys are creating. Not just the trolley itself, but quite often the trolley is used to dump rubbish. I know in near Parsons Grove there's a particular corner where trolleys are dumped, but they're dumped with rubbish and around there. So that's all I need to say.
And seconded, Councillor Hull.
Happy to second this, Mr. Mayor. If we do spend more money on education, it will indicate to the community that we're not just out there to penalise. We are generally in the business of correcting the problem. That will be helpful. And the other changes mentioned I support as well. And it may well go some way to actually having the Legislative Review Committee adopt it, and instead of rejecting it like we had recently with the cat bylaw. So I'm happy to see this happen. It is a problem if you go in the streets of around Parkham or around David Gardens, Secret Gardens, you'll see them there. They're all over the place again. They the community hasn't even got the message that after everything that we've done, a fair bit of press coverage, that this is still a bad idea. They seem to think it's their right to do this, and it's not their right. As for the retailers, Coles and Aldi and whoever else that own the shopping trolleys, I do sympathise with them a bit because essentially their shopping trolleys that are stolen every time that happens. However, the fact that they actually sit there after notification for days and weeks means that they're part of the problem. They're not collecting them. And there's all sorts of deflecting and you know, excuses. I think this council and the community over the excuses. And the notion that we're taking away employment opportunities for the trolley collectors, I think, is a very hollow argument. Because, in fact, if the retailers take this seriously, they'll need more shopping trolley collectors to make sure they don't end up catching the attention of this council.
Anyone speaking against?
Can I
just wait? It was moved with the additional 15,000. Councillor Wallace removed
yes.
that.
So that's
yes. right. You've got it up on the screen. That's right.
Thank you.
Just a question. What's our chances of getting it through? In your opinion?
We'll take that up later. I just hope the wheels don't fall off. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. The cats on wheels basically. Now, the planning laws, page 373. Now, this one certainly bothered me. So, Alex Wright, sorry, Mr. Wright, would you like to come forward, please? I mean, you've got all the makings of assessment manager. But look, this is highly complex stuff. And what, please, Mr. Wright, can you reassure me? Because it looked to me like the report was written to minimise community involvement more than the state government had already decreed. So what do you say to that?
Through the chair, that's certainly not the intention at all. And as you pointed out, it's a very complex issue. When staff first started reviewing the potential changes to the planning system and how it would affect council, the panel, and the staff, we engaged Norman Waterhouse and the LGA to assist in translating the current allegations across from the Development Act into the new PD Act. So the delegations are as best possible a match in translating over. What you may be referring to is the ability for an applicant to review or request a panel review an assessment manager's decision. And the LGA has provided two different pathways, one a simplified version and one a more prescriptive version. The simplified version essentially provides the panel with information that the assessment manager had at the time of the decision. And the prescriptive version essentially is a quasi-hearing. In speaking to the panel at a meeting before Christmas, their intention at that time was they thought the simplified version might be easier for both the panel, the staff and applicants to understand. But they're open to looking at both of those and they'll be discussing that at their next meeting next week.
Now, I don't know what the mood of elected members is, but if we wanted to ask the panel to or express a view as to council's preference as to which avenue the panel would adopt,
yep.
It's their choice, isn't it?
That's correct.
Would we have to do that at this meeting? And if so, how?
You could do that at this meeting by resolution. I think that's item number two.
Yeah.
You could do that at any subsequent meeting of council as well, in terms of
not advising but recommending that the panel or suggest to the panel that they could adopting the more prescriptive version as well. The panel may also, in choosing one model over the other, may find after the Act comes into operation after 6 months or so, that one version may work better than another version as well. And certainly it's a wait and see approach as well from the panel and staff in terms of how it may operate and what impacts it may have on both the applicant, the panel and staff as well.
It's the representors that I'm really talking about.
Yeah.
I can see it's easier than everybody else except the representors. Is that a fair comment?
In terms of a review, it's only the applicant, so if that's what you mean in terms of that decision. The applicant can also appeal that decision to the ERD court as well, which is actually a lesser expense than appealing to the panel. So the applicant does have the option of appealing to the court straight away. They also have the option of appealing the panel's decision in terms of reviewing that decision as well to the ERD court. So there is a whole range of pathways for the applicant to choose.
Okay. And also the timing. I know that we had scheduled training, which had been requested by Council Guard quite a while ago, to a forum in February. So it's just unfortunate timing and putting it on the spot really quickly before we make this decision tonight. But when is the panel bound to make their decision about what they adopt? Or when do you think they're going to do it?
They are able to do it at any point up until the Act becomes live.
Okay.
So essentially they've got about 6 to 8 weeks rough to undertake.
So we don't have to decide this tonight, but if we don't, panel might just say, oh, we're going to do it this way.
That's correct. Okay.
Sorry everybody to bore you with the questions, but it's pretty important stuff for the next while in planning decisions. Other questions, Councillor Hull and Councillor Garner?
Mr. Mayor, I agree that it is important stuff, and if we're actually going further than what it's suggested we go further than what the Act and regulation suggests, I think there's a bit of a problem there. So my question is this like the decision that the panel can make at the moment to actually exclude the public from meetings? So, you know, And is it appropriate, particularly after what's happening at the moment with the service station issue, for us to actually get guidance or suggestions to the CAP about how we would like to see our community treated and managed in terms of development applications?
Through the chair, so it is different from excluding the public to hear discussion of an item. So certainly the panel, in considering an applicant's request for a decision to be reviewed, if the simplified version was chosen, the panel could decide to, and again, it's totally up to the panel in terms of whether they want to hear something in conference or not. If they chose not to, the applicant would be in a position to hear the panel's deliberations on that item. If the more prescriptive version was chosen, the panel could provide the applicant with an opportunity to be heard in respect to that review and also hear from the assessment manager as well in terms of why that decision was taken. And that's separate from the panel's ability in the future to either include the public from hearing that particular item.
Okay. A quick question about us being important to the panel about this? What is that?
Right, wrong, possible, not possible?
So the council can certainly advise the panel and recommend courses of action, but ultimately in the new system, the panel is responsible for their delegations and it's up to the panel to choose what pathway they want to see into the future.
So that's a big change. Councillor Garner.
Yes, Your Worship, I just wanted to get some clarification on wording in number 2. When I get to the second line, I get a little lost. Not being being very late in relation to this area of expertise, the word that or the words that enable, should that read to enable, for example? I'm just, you reread that, I get lost at that point on the word that refers back to a procedure.
Yes.
And possibly, would it help if there was a comma after procedure and a comma after assessment actually?
Probably.
So what it's saying is, we say to the panel, it's their decision, but could they think about, when there's a review against the decision of the assessment manager, which is the council staff person, adopt a procedure which enables the public to participate, as opposed to just doing it on the papers. You've got to file, make the decision, that's it, without discussion.
And at the moment, the procedure for what lives down.
I better ask for clarification.
Yeah, through the chair. So both versions of the procedure will necessitate a report that you present to the panel, outlining why the appeal has been made, or the review has been made, the reasons. The more descriptive version would allow the panel to ask questions of both the applicant, the assessment manager, and also allow that kind of discussion, where the simplified version is simply this is the report, we need to make our assessment in isolation of any other information.
Councillor Crossland, but Councillor Hutchins.
Just a clarification, I'm writing, so that assessment manager and applicant, what about the respondents? Do they get involved in the...
So a review against the assessment manager's decision is purely the applicant and the assessment manager.
Represent force and the applicant. So that was going to be my question. Should it not change to applicant rather than public to make it clearer?
That's probably, is that a fair comment, Mr. Rock? Mm-hmm. It can't be the general public participating or represent force participating.
Right? This is the applicant.
Yep.
Mr. Rock. So yep. That would public can be applicant. Yep. Otherwise, it's giving people false hope.
Yep.
That's the list.
Does that apply for every single category?
In terms of the ability for an applicant to appeal the assessment manager's decision, that's only applications which are being assessed by the assessment manager and or sub-delegated to council staff. Any decision that's undertaken by the council assessment panel, they would have to appeal to the EOT court straight away.
And my question is, how does this work as far as code goes? The stuff that's within code?
Yep. So essentially, under the new system, the code outlines different forms of development. The vast majority of development, we believe, will be assessed by the assessment manager, with very limited applications assessed by the panel in the future. So this does provide the opportunity for applicants, if they are dissatisfied with the decision of the assessment manager, to, before appealing it to the court, to appeal it to the panel for almost like a preliminary review.
And so just following on from that, how does the panel know what to delegate to the assessment manager and what does it? In other words, what is it likely to keep compared to at the moment comes the other way that we give to the assessment panel?
Essentially, at the moment, the council would set delegations such as different forms of development, so unsized allotments, signage. Under the new system, the Act actually outlines the type of development that the panel or assessment manager will see. So the delegations from the panel to council and the staff, it's more administrative work. So instead of the council running an EID court appeal, the panel is the council and the council staff. Instead of the panel having to physically go out and attach a sign for public consultation, it's actually the staff doing that. So effectively, the delegations haven't changed that much in terms of what council staff or the council would be doing. It's just that the council panel has more responsibilities in terms of reviewing decisions and being a relevant authority in their own right.
Thanks. Councillor Prawley.
I have a couple of questions. If the delegations haven't changed that much, then
where does the role of the assessment manager come from in the current delegations?
Yeah, so essentially, at the moment, delegations would be passed through council to the CEO, and the CEO through the manager and other staff. Essentially, the assessment manager in the system for development purposes is like a CEO. And so anything that the panel delegates will be delegated to the assessment manager, which is a body created by the new Planning Act, and they then sub-delegate potentially back to the CEO, back to the manager, back to other staff within the council.
So I guess the question follows, when you compare it to our current system of delegations, where a block can be passed on delegation by our staff. My understanding is the assessment manager sits in between that delegation and the cap, where a developer would normally get pushed up the cap because our staff can't pass out a delegation. Could be passed by the assessment manager using his or her knowledge and skill, I think, in the field. But doesn't that then give us more exposure to decisions which may be further from what we're passing at the moment?
Makes sense. Through the chair, potentially it does. And I guess what the government is relying on is the assessment manager having suitable qualifications and experience in the planning field, for him to then take away from poor decision making in terms of planning outcomes.
So, in half the beauty of the system is that the body at the top is independent from council. And if we're putting more of that work that's going to the independent body back in council, then I mean, I don't see the difference between doing that and then, or just changing the delegation to the staff room so they can pass things that they want. I guess the follow on that is that the real outcome in the actual process is that every time the assessment manager says no, the cap's going to get a cut. Because they're going to go, well, you said no, it's kind of half there. We have to put a cap, and the cap's going to get it. Okay, so anyway, so that has the same flow on it. Then the assessment manager passing more than they should because of the previous history of the cap potential.
I think it's getting wrong. I don't have a question on that difference tonight. Need to leave that form. Unless there are pressing questions, I think we just need to get on and get through this motion.
Going to move. That's Hutchinson. Is that seconded? That's Rossland. No other speakers, all those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Wright. I'll see you at the forum. Now, we are certainly running out of time. There's actually a stack of stuff there. The only thing that's really time sensitive that I can see is the all important Local Government Association Ordinary General Meeting. That one might be time sensitive because we have to appoint a delegate. It's shown anything on this stack. What's the actual meeting? Yeah. Good way to next meeting as well.
Okay.
Well, I certainly caution against an extension to deal with everything. So I guess we could just press on. Would
question?
Yes.
Do the two comments items that probably just more noting, but does the other one need to be dealt with tonight?
No, it needs to be brought to the next meeting, which is now, but there's nothing that compels it to be dealt with. Still need to switch the slides otherwise. Correct, that's all. It's awkward. I mean, looking call on, just trying to think. Call on, I can see a couple of those issues which are actually going to take some time. And the rather not some time off
with the leader of the meeting with people like, can we get through the corporate reports for information and voting? On block and give people the opportunity to ask questions if they wish. There's no objections on the leader of the meeting. Move to Council on the second. Second of Council on the less group, they be those motions be asked on block, which essentially noted in office. But are there any questions? If not, then all those in favour, raise your hand. Thank you. Against? No.
There was one against.
One against. Oh, sorry, it's carried on the charge. Thank you. What can we do on the 2-3 perhaps I have an extension of time, perhaps, that we just deal with the. I'm just suggesting that the carbon neutral and climate policy, sorry, Ms. Gibbons has been waiting patiently, but I just anticipate it will take a little bit of time. People like to talk about that. But maybe we extend to deal with the fraud and corruption, the elected member liaison, and the local government, OGM. They're all probably very good. We leave the meeting. Would someone like to extend some time just deal with those three items?
Yep.
Councillor Lescu, the second. Councillor Telfer, who was part of the all those in favour. Very obliged. Unanimous. So on page 508, fraud and corruption management policy and framework. So Mark Murray, vote, Councillor Hutchinson. Further, is that seconded?
On the question?
No, oh, yeah, absolutely. Question as well. Councillor Howells first.
Did you say that on the dealt with this later part of last year? What has changed since then, and what has been about that change?
I'll ask governments to clarify.
You are quite right, and it did go to an elected member forum, but it was a discussion at the FHI, so the policy wasn't in the framework we had at that time. They are due for their 4-year review, and we're recording the consultation process in the elected member forum. I think it was August, and then went through to November elected member forums last year.
Can I just ask that, without going into detail, whether this council can have frank and fearless advice about such matters, regardless of any suggestion that it might be under investigation, even if it's just a scant reference to the fact that there is a matter being looked at. Just so we don't get surprised like we got the other night in public meeting, which is a terrible way to be formally advised. You can take a point.
Understood. So from the government's point of view, one or more elected members would like some sort of confidence briefing where there's a case of alleged corruption, possibly other alleged offences of dishonesty. What's the government's response to that?
The responsible officer who would be investigating it, the CEO, would take into consideration advice from the authorising body where that's being investigated, because there are the Privileged Disclosure Act requirements, the ICAP requirements, and SACL requirements. So, they generally do what they can to inform members, but there are some requirements sometimes, and that's hard to specify within a policy because there's similar circumstances.
Very well, I would have thought the investigative bodies generally do their best to prevent other members being informed in the circumstances. I guess it's we haven't had that in classes tonight. Councillor,
what's your name? I'm with Councillor
all on this, but we have a member of staff that has a criminal allegation being investigated. We don't need to know the name, but it would be nice to be told, just to let know we have an incident member of staff who's been investigated on SAPOL. We can have some sort of disclosure of the information and receive like that will, which is usually where this goes into a public court process. By that time, should be given a little bit more information, but to find out that it's in the court system and everyone knows exactly what that's in the system is probably not the best way of dealing with it.
So, is there something in the framework that we could, should we in fact put off this item to have to deal with it? Rather than adopting the current policy, or maybe that should be a separate clause.
Your worship, Mr. Lance is waving.
Jumping around. He needs to come out here and do it down here.
Version. this was the elected member concerned that it wasn't accurately happening. Okay. And probably that should extend to offences of dishonesty because they end up being in the courts.
This is it. Like, you know, I hope Mr. Skell understands the way we formally found out the other night from, you know where it's from, was less than. And when would we eventually found out what I've heard the court? Because that's not true either.
Okay, so that's getting into debate, Councillor. We need to resolve this. I'm just dropping the power, Councillor Gard.
One of the slightly different questions, two quick ones. Firstly, regarding the liability cover for $500,000, have we advice from the OBJN or legal advice as to the sufficiency of that cover? And the second question is there a correlation between this set of policies and the policies that address external impacts on organisations such as, for instance, data breaches? I don't know why I mentioned that, but I can imagine we're dealing with informal matters and how we address them. But what of impacts by way of things such as data breaches that occur upon the organisation externally? Do we have a correlating policy? Is it a completely different set of policy, or does it dovetail into this policy?
So there's a data breach reporting procedure internally that I think that's made up. I remember that there is probably a procedure made by ITP. We do have liability for cyber security in terms of
So going back to the first question, is $500,000 a professionally assigned amount, or is it just what people do as a matter of course in the local government? Something that does need further advice.
It's a sector-wide.
So it's a scientific work out of your
It's a sector.
That's just what we do. Yeah.
I have a suggestion perhaps to reassure members on the reporting aspect that's across them.
That's sort of maybe off track a little bit, but when we looked at the minutes of the financial report, which skipped through, but it's relevant to this, is that it was inferred in that highlighted again of our stores and how things have been highlighted where
things will grow is that put in this policy to sort of try and tighten up things about this thing for allegedly on loan?
That's the problem. I fundamentally don't understand why there's an emphasis on fraud and corruption, but not on offences of dishonesty. If you go and take a swag of stuff out of the store and put it in the boot and drive home, that's not covered by this policy.
I mean, unless it looks like that's corruption.
Well, it's not fraud by definition. That's not really. Or is it corruption? Look at the definitions. So that's any other offence committed by a public officer whilst acting in his or her capacity as a public officer. That's probably too broad, I suspect. But maybe that's what it's intended to be. But it means that, and I should think that is defined in the IPAC.
It's saying it's not willful theft, property damage, or willful destruction of the council property or something.
Well, I think it does. It just doesn't say in the whole language, unfortunately.
It depends on how it manifests. You could have a dishonesty or theft situation that manifests in fraud and corruption, or it could just simply be someone stealing something apart from the workplace or whatever. I guess there's a nuance to it.
So Mr. Skull, these questions about lax security, pension things, have things changed in the last 2 years?
Significantly. The audit committee had a great discussion about borrowing and lending staff equipment that they can use. And their recommendation is that we just stop it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing. We have had instances of, I told 80 members of stealing in the store, and one person lost their job last year. And we've certainly got the processes in place, cameras, stock takes, regular audits. So we manage it reasonably well. The company was happy with the analysis of that as well.
And you can borrow something you can never prove that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. It shouldn't be.
And we borrow it. We're going to stop. The reporting issue is really, really tricky. It's a very, very difficult situation when, say, Paul or ICAC is saying, you will not. And there's an integrity issue there, which comes back to me. Makes it very, very difficult. The situation to which Councillor Hull alludes was really embarrassing. And it was actually done in the public forum. But I would contend that I was doing the right thing and was advised, strongly advised by the same thing.
That's what's it.
It'd be helpful in the comment of what it gave them an idea as to the sort of things that could be informed about to know. And I remember during my first term or beginning of my second term, the government's manager calling mayor to call all elected members to advise them of some significant offences that staff were being charged with, so we're aware of it. So I think, you know, we understand that there are restrictions, natural justice, safe or ICAC processes, but we do need to be kept in the loop because we may hear rumours.
That's right, especially when we hear back from people in sports clubs and so on. After that, I think then, by the chief executive, it is a problem. So I think what I'm sort of turning around to is that it's probably more a matter of ensuring the right practice rather than the policy itself. I mean, I don't think it's greatly worded, but I think we're constrained by using the IPAC Act definition, which is not what people expect it to be, unfortunately. I'll say that, you know, we just rely on Chief Executive to make sure that he's sharing with
councillors confidential to the extent permitted when the opportunity or when the need arises. I'll say too that the chief executive with some of these things has been sharing more with the mayor than the elected members. And if there was something that I thought elected members need to know this, I would be pushing for that. But we also have to make sure that our elected member forums, that there's time for confidential discussion. Too often, we go on so much about our other different issues, but don't have time for civil discussion. So it's more a matter of us all making sure that there's time for that conversation to take place. But the policy itself, unless anyone wants to suggest changes.
So the general point is, if this was followed through, Mr. Scalfell lies on saving because of say by request, it goes all the way through the court hearing, then it's picked up by journals, and then they find out the hard way.
Yeah, I think that point has been raised already. Thanks, Councillor. Anyway, it's up for debate. Who would like to move a motion? It's been moved by Councillor Hutchinson. Very succinctly, Councillor Duncan, thank you. Seconded. Any other takers? Then I'll put a motion in favour. Carry it. Sorry, those against? Is there anyone against? All right, carried unanimously, thank you. Next on, elected member liaison, I didn't think there would be any. We've got a councillor X. I don't know if anyone wants to put their hand up tonight. Probably there. Yeah. Councillor Hutchinson, 1.40.
Yes.
Can I suggest, they've never contacted me in 2 years, and there is a difficulty in that they are buying properties down to the street, which creates a conflict for us.
Well, that doesn't mean an officer should be, a liaison officer should be offered. Okay. Just like if it creates a conflict, we can do it. So, Councillor Hutchinson can be Councillor X in line 1.40. So, would somebody like to move accordingly? Councillor Telfer, Secretary of Councillor Crossan, or can I go with it?
Sorry, Your Worship. I think Robert O'Flaherty Community Centre is missing in the list that I'm back on the list.
This
Robert Park is in Memorial Community Centre.
Robert Park.
Memorial Community Centre.
1.4. Councillor Masika.
1.4.
Okay. Is that the one you meant?
1.4.
No, 1.4, page 527. Oh, sorry, I'm looking at the motion on 527.
That's fine. Thank
you. We're all right. Thank you. I'll put it now to the vote. All those in favour? Carry on down as well. Wow. Thank you. Now, one more, a quick tidy up. Page 533. I'm happy to be. Sacrifice my time, members, and be your voting delegate, BLGA. Proxy delegate, customarily, we ask the deputy mayor, it is a Friday morning. Not really had to call on proxy so far, but that's a spot. Put you down? Okay. So if someone would like to move that mail that way, you could put, if you wish to, you could put in the mayor and Councillor Fire in clause one. Councillor Crossan moves, seconded by Councillor Hutchinson. Well, there's no need to move two and three, we're just talking about number one. Thank you. Thanks for pointing that out, that line in the spots. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. I declare the meeting closed.